All right, get ready because we are going deep into biblical prophecy today. Daniel 9.20.27, the 70 weeks prophecy. And you sent us Dr. Wendy Witter's lecture on this. And oh boy, this is a tough one.
Oh yeah, it's a passage that has fascinated scholars for centuries. You know, what's really interesting is how it can be so detailed, but also like incredibly vague.
Yeah.
And this opens the door to so many different ways people interpret it.
Exactly. And so that's what we're going to be doing today, unpacking all those viewpoints. What can we learn from them? But before we get into all that, can you give us like a quick summary? What does this prophecy actually say?
Sure. So the prophecy basically gives us a timeline, 70 weeks. Now, most scholars think these are weeks of years. So 490 years total.
Okay.
It talks about rebuilding Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
The coming of two anointed ones.
Okay.
Or messiahs. There's a special covenant.
Okay.
And ultimately, it talks about the destruction of the temple.
Okay. So we've got 70 weeks, two messiahs, destruction. Sounds pretty intense.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it's vague, too.
Yeah.
What makes it so open to all these different interpretations?
Well, you see, the prophecy doesn't give us any specific names or dates.
Okay.
So we're left with questions like, who are these anointed figures?
Right.
What covenant is it talking about? When does all of this happen?
Yeah.
And depending on how you answer those questions, you can end up with a totally different understanding of the whole prophecy.
Oh, so it's kind of like a historical puzzle, but we're missing some pieces.
Yeah.
And how you fill those gaps changes the entire picture.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
And Dr. Witter, in her lecture, does a great job of laying out the main ways people have tried to solve this puzzle.
Let's start with the one she calls the Maccabean view. Sometimes it's called the Antiochian view. This one puts the fulfillment of the prophecy way back in the 2nd century BC, during the time of Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Now, for those of us who aren't ancient history experts, can you give us like a quick rundown of who this guy was?
So Antiochus Epiphanes IV was a Seleucid king, ruled over Judea in the 2nd century BC. He's known for persecuting the Jews, desecrating the temple in Jerusalem, basically a major bad guy in Jewish history.
Okay, so not a nice guy. But this view, I mean, it's actually pretty popular, right?
It is, yeah. It's the dominant view among non-evangelical scholars.
Okay.
And, you know, the reason it's so appealing is because it seems to fit so neatly into this known historical context.
So how does it work? Like, how do they connect the prophecy with what actually happened during Antiochus's reign?
Right. Well, the prophecy starts with this word that kind of sets the 70 weeks in motion.
Okay.
And the Maccabean view connects this word to prophecies from Jeremiah about the Jews returning from exile, which happened, you know, around the 6th century BC.
So that's our starting point. Then we've got this first anointed one. Who does this view say that is?
Well, here they point to figures who were involved in that return from exile. Some say it's Cyrus the Great, the Persian king who let the Jews go back. Others say it's Zerubbabel. You know, he led one of the groups back to Jerusalem. And then there are someone who say it's Joshua, the high priest at the time. They argue that all three of these figures could be considered anointed.
Right.
Like chosen by God for special roles.
Okay.
Just not in the traditional Messiah sense.
Interesting. So then the 62 weeks, that would cover the time from the return from exile until?
Until the time of Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Around the 2nd century BC.
Okay.
And that anointed one who's cut off at the end of that period, that would be Onias III, the last legitimate high priest before Antiochus came in and defiled the temple.
Hold on, I'm trying to do the math here. Something's not adding up.
Uh-oh.
If we're talking about 70 weeks of years, that's 490 years. But from the return from exile to Antiochus, that's only like 367 years. What happened to the other 123 years?
Yeah, you've hit on one of the big challenges with this view.
Okay.
The math doesn't quite work out if you take those 490 years literally.
Right.
Some scholars try to get around this by suggesting that maybe the weeks are totally literal. Maybe they represent, you know, longer periods of time.
Okay.
But that gets a bit fuzzy.
So are they saying the prophecy just got the timeline wrong?
Not necessarily. There's another idea that some bring in. It's called typology. Now, typology might sound like something out of a textbook, but it's a pretty cool concept. Basically, it means that events in history can, like, foreshadow or mirror events that happen later.
So like a historical rhyme or echo.
Exactly. So even if the 70 weeks prophecy had a historical fulfillment in the Maccabean period, that same pattern could, like, repeat itself on a bigger scale, you know, pointing to even more important events in the future.
So even if the Maccabean view is right about the historical details, that doesn't mean that's all it is to it.
Right.
There could be a deeper symbolic meaning going beyond a specific time and place. That's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, definitely adds another layer of intrigue.
For sure.
But let's move on now to a different interpretation. One that brings a very familiar figure into the picture, Jesus. This is what Dr. Witter calls the Roman view.
now we're talking. This is where it gets really interesting for me. But before we jump into all the details of that view, I think we've covered a lot of ground. We should probably pause here, give our listeners some time to digest all this info about the Maccabean view. All right, so we've looked at how some scholars see the 70 weeks prophecy playing out in the time of Antiochus Epiphanes IV. But now let's shift gears a little bit and look at another interpretation, one that puts Jesus front and center. This is the Roman view. This one connects the prophecy to events leading up to the Roman destruction of the temple in 70 AD.
Yeah, this view, it's sometimes called the historic messianic view, is really popular among like evangelical scholars. They see Jesus as fulfilling key parts of the prophecy.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But how does this view deal with that timeline issue we talked about with the Maccabean view? You know, the math not adding up to 490 years.
Right. Good question. Remember how the prophecy divides those 70 weeks into different periods, like there's 7 weeks and then 62 weeks? Well, people who support the Roman view, they actually combine those two periods into one continuous period of 69 weeks.
So instead of looking at them separately, they just kind of smush them together.
Yeah, exactly.
But why? Why would they do that?
Well, they do this to try and line up the prophecy with the time between a specific decree to rebuild Jerusalem and a major event in Jesus's life. To make the timeline work, they usually point to a decree from one of the Persian kings. Often, it's Artaxerxes. They say that's the starting point for those 69 weeks.
Interesting. So they're basically choosing a different starting point for the countdown?
Right.
And if Jesus is the first anointed one in this interpretation, then when does the second anointed one show up?
This is where it gets really interesting. The Roman view actually says that Jesus fulfills both roles.
Whoa, hold on.
The first anointed one is connected to his coming in ministry, but the second one, the one who's cut off, that actually refers to his crucifixion.
Wow, a W-duty Messiah. That's a powerful idea. Now, I remember Dr. Witter mentioned a couple of commentators who hold this view. Joyce Baldwin and Edward Young. Didn't you say that they had some, like, tweaks to the traditional interpretation?
Yeah, you're right. For example, Joyce Baldwin, she suggests that while the events around Jesus might be like an initial fulfillment of the prophecy, there's also this typological aspect that points to future events, too. She doesn't see it as a, like, one-and-done kind of prophecy.
I see. So even within one viewpoint, you can have these nuances and variations. It's not just about picking a side.
Exactly. And this actually leads us to a category of interpretations that really gets people talking, especially those who are into, you know, end times prophecies. These are the eschatological views.
Eschatological views. Okay, I gotta admit, that word makes me think of, like, epic battles between good and evil and the whole world going up in flames. Are we talking about, like, end of the world stuff here?
Yeah, you got it. These views suggest that the 70 weeks prophecy hasn't actually been completely fulfilled yet, and that it points towards some future culmination, possibly even the end of the world as we know it.
Whoa, okay, this is where my head starts to spin a little bit. Dr. Witter mentioned two main types of these eschatological views, the symbolic view and the interval view. Let's break those down a little bit, starting with the symbolic one. What makes this one so different from the others we've talked about?
Well, the symbolic view, as you can probably guess from the name, tends to interpret the timeline and the figures in the prophecy symbolically rather than literally. So it's less concerned with matching up specific dates and historical figures and more focused on these broader patterns and themes.
So it's like reading the prophecy as a kind of allegory or metaphor.
Exactly. And there are actually a couple of variations within this view. One variation focuses on Cyrus the Great as the first anointed one. And they see the 62 weeks as representing this kind of indefinite period of time leading up to the end times. In this variation, the second anointed one would be the Antichrist, you know, the ultimate bad guy in end times theology.
Wow, that's a pretty dramatic interpretation. So in this view, we're still waiting for that final showdown between good and evil.
Right.
And what about the other variation of this symbolic view?
This one's a bit trickier because, as Dr. Witter pointed out, there aren't that many commentators who, like, explicitly hold this view. But basically, it sees both anointed ones as being Jesus.
Okay.
The first one would be his first coming, and the second one would refer to his second coming at the end of time.
Wait a minute. If both anointed ones are Jesus, wouldn't there have to be, like, a huge gap in the middle of those 70 weeks to, you know, account for all of history between his first and second coming?
You're absolutely right. For this variation to work, you'd need a massive gap in the 70 weeks, something like the entire church age, which spans, you know, almost 2,000 years.
Yeah, that's a pretty big gap to just gloss over. So are they saying that we're basically still waiting for those final events to happen, even though the first part of the prophecy, you know, was fulfilled centuries ago?
Exactly. And that brings us to another interpretation that also involves a gap in the timeline. This is the interval view. It's especially popular among dispensationalists.
Now, I've heard that term dispensationalism thrown around a lot, but I'm not sure I totally get it. Can you give us a quick explanation?
Sure. Dispensationalism is a way of interpreting the Bible that divides history into these distinct periods or dispensations. Each one has its own, like, unique way that God interacts with humanity.
Okay, so it's like looking at history through these different lenses, and each lens represents a different phase of God's plan.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. And in the interval view, the big idea is that there's this gap or pause within the 70 weeks, specifically within that final 70th week.
Hold on. A gap within a week? How does that work?
Well, people who believe this view, they usually point to one of Artaxerxes' decrees as the starting point for the 70 weeks. Just like the Roman view, they combine the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks, and they see them as being fulfilled by the time of Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem.
Okay, so far so good. But where does this gap come in?
They see Jesus' crucifixion as the moment the Anointed One is cut off. But then it's like they hit the pause button on that 70th week.
So they're saying the 70th week isn't actually a continuous 7 years. It's like someone, I don't know, sliced it in half and stuck something else in the middle.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. According to this view, the 70th week is interrupted by this gap that could be any length of time. And guess what? Dispensationalists believe that we're living in that gap right now.
Wait, seriously. So we're in this like suspended period of time, just waiting for the last 7 years of that 70th week to play out.
Exactly. And when that final week kicks back in, that's when things get really intense. That's when you have the tribulation, the rise of the Antichrist, and ultimately the second coming of Jesus.
Okay, now I see why people get so excited about this interpretation. It's like we're living in the prequel to the biggest blockbuster event of all time. Didn't Dr. Witter mention a commentator named Stephen Miller who supports this view?
Yeah, Stephen Miller is a big proponent of the interval view. He lays out his arguments pretty clearly in his commentary.
So we've got the Maccabean view, the Roman view, the symbolic view, and the interval view. That's four totally different ways of understanding this one prophecy. It's amazing how one passage can lead to so much debate and so many different ideas.
It really speaks to how rich and complex biblical prophecy is, and it reminds us that interpretation isn't always about finding one right answer. It's about really engaging with the text, you know, considering different perspectives and being open to those little nuances and ambiguities.
That's a great point. It's like we're all detectives trying to solve this puzzle, and sometimes there's more than one way to fit the pieces together. But before we get too lost in the maze of interpretations, let's take a step back and think about what this all means for our listeners. Okay, so we've gone through these four main interpretations of the 70 weeks prophecy. Each one has its own way of looking at the timeline, the key figures, you know, and how it all ultimately gets fulfilled. It's a lot to take in, right? But before we finish up, I want to kind of bring it back to you, the listener. What stands out to you from all this? Like, what makes you want to dig deeper?
You know, that's a really good question, because this prophecy, it's not just some like ancient riddle we're trying to solve. It gets at these really fundamental questions about how we're supposed to understand the Bible, the whole idea of prophecy, even like where history is headed.
Exactly. Like if you think the Maccabean view is right, you might see it mainly as a historical record of things that already happened, you know, centuries ago. But if you're a dispensationalist, well, you might believe we're living in that gap between the 69th and 70th week with like the biggest events still to come. That's a totally different worldview.
Oh, absolutely. And it brings up this really important question for anyone trying to, you know, understand the Bible. How do we approach interpreting it, especially when it comes to prophecy? Do we take things literally, symbolically? Are we looking for historical insights, or is it all about predicting the future? I mean, these are questions scholars have been debating for centuries. There's no easy answer.
Yeah. And that brings us back to Dr. Witter's lecture. She presented all these different viewpoints, but she never really said, hey, this is the right one, everybody. Why do you think she chose to do that?
I think it shows something really important about like biblical scholarship itself. You know, it's not always about finding just one definitive answer. It's more about engaging with the text, considering the different ways to look at it, and just acknowledging that sometimes there is ambiguity.
So it's not so much about having all the answers, but more about like asking the right questions.
Exactly. And that's one of the great things about a deep dive like this. We're not here to tell you what to think. We're here to give you the knowledge, the tools, so you can think for yourself.
Love that. And that brings us to our provocative thought for the day. We've talked a lot about how people have interpreted this 70 weeks prophecy, but what about the prophecy itself? Like, why was it given? What was its original purpose? You know, who was it for? Was it meant to be some sort of precise schedule of future events? Or was it something else entirely? Something more?
Those are all fantastic questions to think about as you continue exploring this topic. And here's a little challenge for you. Don't just stop with this deep dive. Go pick up a commentary, read about the different viewpoints we talked about, and see what conclusions you come to. You might be surprised by what you find.
Yeah, that's so true. And remember, even if we don't have all the answers right now, the process of discovery, that's just as important as, like, the destination. You know, so keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.